Thanks for coming, and this is our theme for today, the secularization of time and Christian temporality. And that's very much connected to the plenary I just gave yesterday. And I will start with a name which has been quoted very much here, Patrick Deneen. Culture is the practice of faux temporality, an education in the full dimension of human temporality. I really like that. And I think it helps to understand some points I have raised in my former speaking regarding culture and structure. And I think you remember that I said we must act in both dimensions of contemporary society. And when we think about culture, of course, there are lots of things we should address. But I think the way we relate to time is one of the most important today. So that was the reason I chose that issue. So in the other lecture, the other plenary in the afternoon, I will address human rights because this is a structural development we had in our modern culture. So I will try to get something of both dimensions. But keep what Deneen says in mind as we go ahead. So I will start speaking about how we need a wider view of time and how does it control our life. I guess many of you know that guy. I really like his movies. So Christopher Nolan was called the time traveler in an interview. And if you go through his movies, you see him trying to, you know, to play with that, with our different levels of time experience and how it changes everything depending on how you relate to it. And I like very much his piece in Dunkirk. I think some of you probably watched that, and you've seen that there is levels of time, and it flows differently in the movie. And I found it really nice to teach about the complexity of time experience. But of course, this is a well-known thing in sociology and anthropology. So Norbert Elias wrote a book about that. It was one of the groundbreaking books on it, explaining how time is experienced by us as a coordination and integration of collective action. Of course, you have like physical time. We count physical time in many ways, and it forms a basis for our time experience. But time experience is much more than that. One of the basics, for example, is the primitive time experience related, very much controlled by biological time. And I mean here the cycles of, you know, the seasons. And you must, you know, plant and harvest. And you have times of fertility and times of sterility. And that organizes social time in primitive societies, or maybe not just primitive, just like antique societies. And it organizes even religion. So we know that part of the prophetic addressing in the Old Testament was against false religions, which based moral life and rhythms not really governed by God, but governed by biological experience. And so you have the fertility worship. It comes from that. It's related to biological time. Some of you know that guy. Some like him and some hate him. But I really like his view on time. Hermann Dooyeweerd explained time as both duration and order as two dimensions of our time experience. So duration is something in your conscience, you have that feeling of past, present, and future, and we can organize that and even feel that together. So we feel time passing through, and we, in some moments, we feel that it goes too fast, in some moments too slow, but this is our time experience. And then you have order. And order is before and after. Of course, in our conscience, we feel like that, before and after. But it happens in other aspects of reality. In physics, for example, there is a time arrow. So you cannot, like, break a cup. You're not going to see it organizing and, you know, fixing and coming back to the table. You know, there is a time arrow. And you can see that in physics. You can see the same order like in maths, for example. You say that the order we have with numbers and quantities, like 1, 2, 3, this is time, but in the realm of numbers. And you have biological time, of course. And there is some reversibility in biological time. You don't have that in physics. And then you have historical time, logical time, so there is an order to thinking, and he sees each of these orders as expressions of cosmic time. And I think this is helpful to understand why we feel that order of before and after. And even in ethics, there are things that are most important and less important. And ethical time affects our use of time, because we must take decisions about priorities. And this is a kind of time awareness. We have several forms of time to synchronize. That's the big thing. As our society develops and like becomes differentiated in different fields, so you have new decisions to take about the order of things and priorities. And I'll give some example to you. You have the professional time. It's related to markets. And you have some time to teach yourself something, some profession. And you take a time to enter the market and find a nice position there. But I will give an example. If you are a woman, you must take decisions about having children before or at the same time. Everything. You must take decisions about that. And this is connected to biological time for women. So priorities are related to time orders. And society can change. The markets can change. And so the watches change, will change also. And there is an effort to, to win over these biological times we have today. So we can try to change society to make biological time do not affect very much the decisions of people in profession. But we have other experiences of time. We have also this moral time in relation to decisions about parenting and about how to relate to our parents, even. Anyway, I think you had a clue of my point here. So there is a complexity in our experience of time. There is the basis of it in physics, but of course you have biological time and other forms of time, and it can change depending on the culture, but not totally, because it still you must have before and after in different levels of life. And the decisions about before and after in the human aspect of life have a moral dimension. So that's it. Now I go to some of cultural history here, and again I'll quote Charles Taylor, where he speaks about great time, or big time, and time topologies. This is in his Secular Age book. In the pre-modern era, the organizing field for ordinary time came from what I want to call higher times. What did higher times do? One might say they gathered, assembled, and reordained, punctuated profane ordinary time. Let me grasp a needle and call this later secular time. So he speaks a lot about these two kinds of time. So there is ordinary time. This is not the totally secular time yet, but there is ordinary time. And you know, decisions you must take, for example, about planting and harvesting. And you have higher times, which organize the other levels of time experience in our decisions. And he connects the great time with the mythology or even theology. In the case of Christianity, it was the Christian narratives. So you have a overarching structure that affects all the other levels of time experience and ordinates our priorities. And this is reflected in the way we imagine time. The great time is thus behind us, like, you know, Genesis story, Abraham, Noah, everything. This is kind of primitive time intuition. But then time is also above us and ahead of us, because our view of the beginnings affects our view of history now and our future. So the great time is also exemplar. And we can be closer or farther away from it as we move through history. So in Christianity, of course, we have that idea of creation and new creation. And in some way, both are present here now. And we are feeling both. And the way we answer to that higher time affects, as I said, all the other levels. So the way you see the importance of biological time for life and the relationship of it to professional time, this is governed by higher times, your larger view of history and time experience. But then we had what Charles Taylor calls the Great Purge. Modern secularization can be seen from an angle as the rejection of higher times and the positing of time as purely profane. Events now exist only in this one dimension, in which they stand at greater and lesser temporal distance, and in relations of causality with other events of the same kind. The move to what I'm calling secularity is obviously related to this radically purged time consciousness. So this is very important for me, is that modernity changes our time experience because it takes off the overarching higher time of Christianity. And then you have no reference to take decisions about before and after, in different levels. And then you have a war of times, as to say, like the biological against the professional. And that happens in other levels, in politics also, in economics, in different areas of life. The war against the old in contemporary society is an example of that. So contemporary society has a trouble with the impact of babies and old persons have over our present. This is a time disorganization, as to say. So again, Patrick Denis says like that, more than a system of government or legal and political order, liberalism is about redefining the human perception of time. It is an effort to transform the experience of time, in particular the relationship of past, present, and future. So I was emphasizing the time order aspect, but there is the duration aspect also, which is our experience of past, present, and future, and liberalism is very much a presentist It's like it emphasizes the now. And then we have this new ideology which was put in the place of Christian temporality in modernity, and you have the idea of progress. And I would suggest here that classic book from Bob Hautzwart, Capitalism and Progress. It's a very nice book, and he's a Christian, of course. And I really enjoy the way he presents the rise of the modern idea of progress, and how it's, of course, we had to abandon the Christian narrative to get this new one. So you have this huge idea of progress, and it tells a story of the obsolescence of everything in the past and everything that appears to you in the present. So you have this moving frontier of obsolescence, and everything goes to trash as we advance in the historical process. And that means a hostility towards the past. And hostility towards the past means that in this present, I do not share anything really very important with other people, because we are just sharing something that must be trashed, and we must leave that. So it fragments our awareness as society. You have this temporally atomized imagination. So the loss of a sense of continuity, of narratives, of memory and common calendars atomizes society and weakens its ability to act in common, act together. The method of continuous obsolescence robs us from the past, of the past, and makes us always children who were born yesterday. So I'm just trying to express that. Maybe it wasn't so clear. But the point is that there is a relationship between do things together and share temporality. You cannot separate both. And then we have that fracture in our contemporary society. So this is a longer quote from Denis. Culture is the practice of full temporality, an institution that connects the present to the past and the future. As the Greeks understood, the mother of culture, of the nine muses, was Mnemosyne, whose name means memory. Culture educates us about our generational debts and obligations. At its best, it's a tangible inheritance of the past, one that each of us is obligated to regard with the responsibilities of trustship. It is itself an education in the full dimension of human temporality, meant to abridge our temptation to live within the present with the attendant dispositions of ingratitude and irresponsibility that such a narrowing of temporality encourages. So I just like very much that. My only comment would be that he emphasizes very much the thing of duration, past, present, and future. But there is another side of temporality that it's lost when we miss a full temporality. And this is a sharing of the befores and afters. We miss also that. So we cannot synchronize our priorities anymore because of that. But going to the Bible, what can we say about it? So I like that book from John Walton, The Lost World of Genesis 1, and then he has the other one, The Lost World of Adam and Eve. I think this is the title. But anyway, I'm not following everything in his argument. But he has a nice point when he's explaining Genesis 1, and he argues there that when God created light, he was actually creating the first day. The point was not like photons, you know, wasn't like modern physics, because he separates day, light and darkness, and you have the first day. So When he creates light in the very beginning, he is creating time. And then you have the week. So God is creating a time order. That's the point. And that time order has a telos. And the telos is God's rest. And before that, there is a temple with human being there. And the God's image is brought to the temple, the cosmic temple, in the end of this week. So you have a overarching time structure to life. And God created that time structure. And you must respect that. So this is a totally different way to read Genesis, because we always think about Genesis in terms of the creation of matter, of things. And we are not used to think of temporality as a central aspect of God's creation and of Christian life even. Because I think partly because of modern science. It really affects the way we read the Bible. So I agree very much to the point of John Walton. And I would say from his work that God created a rhythm for life which is based in eternity and communicates to eternity. And he created that. And to reject your position of as creature and your dependence on eternity is related to this confusion of time, starting with not respecting the Sabbath. And that's the reason Sabbath is so important, because it's a symbol of God's rest, which is the telos of creation. So it's everything connected in a way to time. It's counterintuitive, but I think you are getting my point. So when you go to Ecclesiastes, you have that. Everything has a season, and a season for every purpose under heaven. But that's it. There is heaven and eternity, and there is time. And time is made of seasons. So there is time order. And we must recognize that and accept it as creatures and follow that. But you need to have the higher times governing your consciousness. So I'll not read everything, but the point is that time is timed in the biblical perspective. It's not just a physical flow, infinite physical flow. You know, it's timed. Let me read the next thing here. I think it's important. Ephesians 1. He has made known to us the mystery of his will, according to his good determination, which he purposed in him for the dispensation of the fullness of time, to bring all things together in Christ, both that which are in heaven and that which are in earth. So I like some of the details of that language when he speaks about a dispensation or a economy of the fullness of time. So that's it. There is God's economy in history, and that is made of times. And there is order and before and after, and there is a telos. And in the right time, everything connects to Christ. This is the fullness of time. So time is timed and Christ-centered. And this should be the overarching category to think about the time orders in a modern and differentiated society where we have like science programs, political programs, economics, and they have, of course, new things like this affective field. So we must think in terms of Christian temporality everywhere. The maturity of natural, cyclical, and also historical times takes place according to a divine administration at the right moment for the convergence. Literally, it's the, what's the expression? Anakephalesis. That's the Greek expression for that. The heading, or in Latin, recapitulation. This was the translation from Irenaeus, of everything in Christ. Time has, in the Christian perspective, a synchronic coherence and a converging direction. So this would be a Christian view of time, I suggest. And then what should we do about that? We must to create kairotic consciousness. So the point should be how to relate the different levels of time experience to that center. And the church has done that in a way. The church started to do that, Christian church, from the beginning. And you have that idea of sanctification of time. And I'm quoting here a Reformed liturgist and theologian that I really like, von Alman. And he says like that, how to define the sanctification of time? To sanctify time is to recognize that the starting point as well, the culmination of time, is the mystery of Christ's death and resurrection. And it is to refer it to that central and determining moment, whether it is near or far from that event, from the point of chronological view. So, if we discover that eternity is so close in Christ's resurrection, and we found this center of time, so the point should be to recognize the presence of the eternal in each aspect of our time experience, or each moment also, we should say. So the church gave some practical steps to reach that. And then you have the calendar, for example, the Christian calendar was the move in that direction. The holy day of Sunday, this is Eusebius. The holy day of Sunday is the commemoration of the Savior. It is called Sunday because he is the Lord of days. In fact, before the Lord's Passion, it was not called Sunday, but the first day. It was only on this, I must explain that. This is my translation is not clear. We are speaking about the Dominical. Or in Portuguese, it's Domingo. It's Domini Day. That's it. The Day of the Lord. So, of course, in English, it's just Sunday. It's still pagan. Just joking. It was on this day that the Lord began the creation of the world. Look at this. They were thinking about time in the beginning of Christian history. So when did God create the world? Because he started with the first day. So the first day was Sunday. This was the day the Lord began the creation of the world. And on the same day, he gave the first fruits of the resurrection to the world. So there is creation and new creation on Sunday. That is why that day is the beginning of all good. The beginning of the creation of the world, the beginning of the resurrection, the beginning of the year. Of the week. So you see that happening here. He is taking ordinary time and anchoring it in the higher time and giving a transcendent meaning to time experience. And now it will govern all the decisions about priorities. Because you must organize your week as in a way that you have the Sunday as the convergence point. So you have the services through your week. And then you do the same with the day, and you have the hours of praying. And then it develops in the Christian year when they start with the Easter, and the calendar starts to grow from Easter time to encompass all the year with theological meaning. And that would govern the rhythms of society. So this is deeply embedded in modern culture still, but they are trying to take it off. That's the reason in French Revolution, they really fought to change calendars because this was really essential to change culture. And you know, what happens to us now is that we have other forces working to remove that Christian rooting of time experience. And we must be attentive to that. So the point would be intentionally relating the many circles of time, and I use that experience to speak about Schaeffer's moment by moment and the day, the week, the Christian year, the way we relate generationally, our view of the future and history. So you can think of concentric circles of time, and we should think Christianly about each circle. And this would be Christian philosophy of time, not just history, but having Christ as its center. But why is it necessary? This has to do with our human nature. And I quote here this sociologist, Byung-Chul Han, who is a Korean sociologist, worked in Germany, and he has become quite popular in Brazil. I don't know about here. But he says like that in one of his books, quoting this other important guy, Hartmut Rosa. Rituals create a community of resonance capable of playing a chord in a shared rhythm. Rituals promote resonance axes socially, culturally established, throughout which vertical resonance relations with God, cosmos, time, and eternity, horizontal in social community, and diagonal to other things, become experienceable. Without resonance, we reverberate ourselves and isolate ourselves. Increasing narcissism prevents the experience of resonance. Resonance is not an echo of itself. It is inherently the dimension of the other. It means a chord. Yes. So you see here the point, because we were speaking about narcissistic culture, subjective centering and everything, and this is the cultural side, and there is the institutional. But we need institutions to embody the Christian perspective of time. That's it. When you do not have a shared framework for time experience, each one has its own, and you cannot synchronize. That's a trouble. So this is the book, The Disappearance of Rituals. I just found that it is in English. You know, first half of it is really great. The second is miserable. So I'm just telling you, he starts to speak about it's not nihilistic, you know, but his view on positivity and negativity and the place of death and how to face the fear of death is really bad. He's really like a sub-Christian. But he got something about rituals that is right. So I will quote some pieces of it because I think you'd enjoy. We can define rituals. Look at this. Symbolic techniques of making oneself at home in the world. You know, this is a funny translation, but in German it's just one expression. So in Portuguese it's encasamento. It's like to make home. So you can make home from physical things. But how do you make a home for you in time? That's the ritual. It's your home, but in time, not made of bricks. They transform being in the world into a being at home. They turn the world into a reliable place. They add to time what a home is to space. They render time habitable. They even make it accessible, like a house. They structure time, furnish it. I love that. They furnish your time experience. Rituals are processes of embodiment, and that is the point I was mentioning about the culture and structure. You must change worldview and intuitions and feelings, of course. You must to connect it to God's reality, but it must to have a concrete embodiment. So you're going to need structures, and that means institutions and rituals. That's it. And liturgies. You need that to embody those things. Of course, lots of Christians feel like this would be like a Catholic move, or maybe something like not very authentic. But I don't need to explain the trouble with the overemphasis in authenticity. So we already went too far in that direction, and we need to balance it. In them, the valid order and values of a community are physically experienced and solidified. They are written into the body, incorporated, that is, physically internalized. Thus, rituals create a bodily knowledge and memory, an embodied identity, a bodily connection. A ritual community is a communal body, and there is a bodily dimension inherent to community. So this would be the idea of temporal architectures. Is the way you build a home in time. But look at this, the other side. The culture of authenticity goes hand in hand with the distrust of ritualized forms of interaction. Only spontaneous emotion, that is, a subjective state, is authentic. So if you have the structuring, ritual, calendar, liturgy, all of this it's felt for people like as something restraining them, you know, and not very authentic. But this is a trouble with modern culture, not with the real thing. Behavior that has been formed in some way is denigrated as inauthentic or superficial. In the society of authenticity, actions are guided internally, motivated psychologically. Whereas in ritual societies, actions are determined by externalized forms of interaction. And then he goes too far to say even that it doesn't matter what at all what you are feeling, just the ritual. So, but I can get his point. He is reacting to what he sees in contemporary modern society. Rituals make the world objective, and I like that especially. Because all the trouble with the authenticity culture is the denial of a moral order which is external to you. And rituals help to embody it and make it like touchable. The compulsion of authenticity, by contrast, makes everything subjective, thereby intensifying narcissistic tendencies. So to fight narcissism, we must do something in that direction also, in terms of cultural changing. Not just ideas about how to flee from narcissistic values and expressive individualism. We must do something practical, and I said that yesterday, to align agency. That's the thing. We must find ways to align agency, to put people together doing the same and imagining and doing the same thing. And that means liturgies, because they create a topology of time, which is contrary to the modern flattening of time. So we could talk about chronoformation. I don't know who here likes sci-fi movies. I love sci-fi movies. And always there is some alien trying to terraform us, you know. So we could think of chronoforming. Modernity is chronoforming. So Christianity, in that way, there is an antithesis here. We must fight back chronoforming. That's it. And bringing Christian temporality, giving it a touchable expression, or fighting to keep it. We don't need to win over modern culture. We need just to give a demonstration. That's the point. But it must be visible. So we need temporal architectures to express our priorities, contain liturgies and rites built around the goods we cherish most. And then you have Sunday. As there was that movement in England, we must keep Sunday special. It's as to say a pit stop to recover the narrative axis of all history, starting with Christ, and to order the liturgy of existence around this axis. I mean the day, the week, everything. You know, the moment, the day, the week, the year, our view of history and future. This action of from the church is part of the logic of eschatological vigilance. So from our overarching time, our higher time, the center of history, of course, is Christ. But that means that he introduced a new creation, and we are moving to the new creation. So the expectation of a new creation must organize our befores and afters in the different levels of our time experience today. So that's it. Looking to the end, to what is God's plan and in Jesus, we think in a Christ-centered way, and that would mean a eschatological way to think about our time now. So anticipation must be present also in everything we do. And then you have Romans 13. It is time for you to wake up from sleep, for our salvation is now nearer than it was at the beginning when we believed, first believed. The night is late and the day is approaching. Let us lay aside the works of darkness and put on the works of light. Let us live decently, like those who live by day, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and depravity, not in discord and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ, and do not keep thinking about how to fulfill the desires of the flesh. Look at this. Here you have a reference to Genesis and to the new day which is approaching. So with the awareness of the new day coming, it changes your priorities. And to be vigilant is to think about your priorities and what you should do or not should do. And you take decisions. But look at this. The moral decisions we are taking now are governed by expectation. So time awareness affects our moral life. So this is building a kairotic conscience. So the church takes it and spreads it like in the times of the day, in the week, the church points some moments to help us to remember about our expectation and renew our relationship to that. So the church liturgy, which is not just for like the service on Sunday, but for life, it was like that from the beginning, is a way of chronoformation, connecting all our time experience and our morality, of course, to our expectation, future expectation. Sunday and the other circles of time are liturgical responses of the church to revive the paschal and eschatological consciousness of the people of God. And the Christian calendar employs annual cycles based on the cycle of the seasons to cultivate a collective sense of the Christian Passover narrative. So the purpose of those resources is to cultivate the kairotic consciousness of church, of the people of God. And this is the nice thing. We are remembering together in each pit stop we do, through the day, through the week, through the year, we are remembering together our destiny and how it must organize our life today. And then there is that expression I've read already from Byung-Chul Han. And now James Smith, he has been saying something similar to what I'm saying. What are liturgies? Rituals of supreme concern. Rituals that form identity, that inculcate particular visions of the good life, and do so in a way that seeks to take the place of other ritualistic formations. Liturgies are ritual practices that function as pedagogies of supreme desire. But that's it. The overarching time is a way to teach about, we say the evil and the good and what is the hyper good and the less important goods. But we could think, using Kierkegaardian terms, we could speak of eternity and time. It's another way to say the same thing. So the point is that temporality governs imagination and collective action. When you flatten time, you will lose the collective action and you fragment your experience because you cannot synchronize to other people anymore. And liturgies engage, educate, and engage community in a shared temporality. And we should think, I guess, that we should do that now. We should think liturgically to help the Christian people to survive our narcissistic times.